Don't believe what I just saw.
I'm a man. I'm 40.
This is John Sheezer. I'm
Eric Marino.
Eric.
No, I got to tell you about the Clippers. I'm an
addict. Sportsaholics. I got to.
Let's just hope this shit doesn't go viral.
Okay.
Back. This is Sportsaholics episode 93. Let us hear it, Eric. Who are you going with?
I'm going with the Seymour. I know you're going to go John Randall, but I'm going Richard Seymour.
Well, all I know about John Randall is that he wore that face paint around his eyes, kind of had a Batman thing, very similar to what Batman puts around his eyes when he puts on his outfit anyway, kind of thing.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, right before we started this podcast, I was saying to Sheez behind the scenes that I was like, John Randall, in a way, his career reminded me of someone like, as soon as you knew his name, as soon as he was an NFL household name, if you will, it was almost like his numbers started to peter off and he wasn't actually as great as his rep when he got it. But looking at his numbers, I would not have bet that he is actually in the Hall of Fame, that he is an inductee in the Hall of Fame. Had a great, apparently, 13 years career in Vikings, the huge Viking, had an ongoing rivalry with Brett Favre. Brett Favre for calling him one of the most unblockable and artificial turf. All right, John Randall.
You got to remember, he's in Minnesota, Randy Moss, going through all Randy Moss rookie year, all that stuff. The Chris Carter,
yeah.
Reed. What was his first name? Reed. The third wide.
He was like, he was really kind of the first or second. And Randy Moss came in the third. It was, you know, that's just how great that. That's why that 98 Viking team and Randy Moss was so amazing, because when Randy Moss came in, he was your third receiver. So you're putting your third cornerback, you know, dimeback, nickelback on that guy, and you couldn't handle him. And you certainly couldn't. And if you put your best guy on Moss, then you had Jake Reed and Chris Carter to contend with. It was, there was death by any means necessary. Choose your poison.
When I worked at Outback Steakhouse in 1998, when I participated in fantasy football for the first time, Randy Moss was indeed drafted by myself. As a rookie, I had watched his college film. No one knew anything about him, and obviously they were like, you know, I don't think you understand how to play fantasy football. You want to get guys that score touchdowns, not guys. You don't want to draft rookies. Because at that time, I'm like, just give me Tony Gonzalez, and I'm good. Just whoever else you want to throw in is fine. But
you know what? Actually, Steve, as we're approaching, you know, there's only 3 weeks left of the NFL season, so we're approaching the playoffs. And if I've never given the Sportsaholics fans this, and thank you guys all for listening to the podcast, but here's a great way to bet on the playoffs. It's called an ownership pool. It's not fantasy football. Here's a different thing, a way to bet on the playoffs. What you do is you get together as many teams as there are in the playoffs this year. You create ownership of each team. You buy in. You set any number of cookies or dollar bills that you want to throw into a pool. And that's your ownership stake. And that's how you do. You buy a team. You can buy the New England. The reason I remember is I did this in 1998 with the Minnesota Vikings. And so what the thing is so you then, you everybody who wants to own a team, they throw the money into a pot. So there are as many ownerships. There's as many owners or ownership groups as there are at playoff teams. Once all the money's in, each one of the owners, you pick at random, so you pick, hey, I got the Pittsburgh Steelers, or I got the Broncos, I got the Arizona Cardinals, or the Carolina Panthers. Now, Now what you'd have to do is you go into the playoffs, but you play as if you're the owner of that franchise, but you also have to cover your spread. So, for example, I believe it was something where the Vikings were, back in 98, I think the Vikings were playing, I want to say, the St. Louis Rams. And what happened was the Vikings won, but they didn't cover their spread. So what actually happened is so while the owners of the Vikings were initially happy, it was actually the owners of the St. Louis Rams that won the bet, and they move forward, and they take over ownership of the Vikings going into the next round of the playoffs. And it's a great way to play the playoffs. It's a great way to bet, because then if you do this in your office or, you know, with a group of people, lots of people, especially you're going to have a group of owners that get knocked out week one, and then some people are going to want to buy back in, and so you as an owner of one of the winning franchises can actually sell off a piece of your franchise to another person.
To give them a stake in the pool. So at that point, they have like, you know, I'll give you.
Right, and so then you can hedge your bet. Like if the buy-in is, you know, hey, everybody pay $10, and then you can go, well, I'll let you buy in, but, you know, you paid me $5, so, you know, for 20% of my stake, you know?
So then
you're like, right, so you're gambling, now you're gambling on someone else's money, which is fun. And then you have this, and so it was one of those things where in the, I ended up having a piece of both teams going into the Super Bowl, and I won money both ways.
It's fun gambling. One year I won the comedy store. I think I won like the third quarter of the squares. I bought squares.
Sure.
You know, and that's always a good time. You just throw it in. What's $5? And then I think I got like 120, you know, or something like that. And yeah, if I played 8 years and only won once, yeah, big deal. But it's that extra little thing, you know, that keeps you interested. You're hoping, you're like, man, if they could only get a safety on the 18-yard line now, I could totally.
All I know is every Super, it's like a tradition in my family that at some point after a Super Bowl, I inevitably will hear if such and such happened in such and such a time, my dad would have won $5,000.
You've heard this story.
If certain things had happened, like for example, when the Patriots beat the Rams, if that Tabucky Jones touchdown had counted, that would have, you know what I mean? Like, if the game had ended that way, that meant, oh, that was $5,000 or $30,000 or whoever knows. That was the big prize. And my father is always, he is Mr. Just Close and almost wins the big, you know, final score of the Super Bowl, but for something that happened.
What was that name you said? Tabucky Jones?
Oh, Tabucky Jones was Syracuse University. Defensive back.
Give me a second. I'm gonna look this guy up for a second. Go ahead. Go.
What happened was, to refresh your memory, is it was late in the game. The Rams were driving, but on the 1 yard line, Kurt Warner was trying to sneak it into the end zone and got hit so hard by the Patriots defense that he gave up the will to live and dropped the ball at the one, which then bounced into the end zone. And the greatest thing was, like, the ball was bouncing in the end zone and was not in anyone's hands. But at the same time, you could see it was about to jump. It was about to go perfectly into Tabucky Jones' hands. And you could also see that he had three Patriot defenders that had already created a wall. So even though he was 3 yards deep in his own end zone and the ball was bouncing and he didn't have control of it, you knew that all he had to do was get it in his hands, and he would literally be gone 103 yards the other way for a touchdown, which is absolutely what happened, except the play got called back because of a holding penalty on Willie McGinnis on Marshall Faulk. Marshall Faulk was held by Willie McGinnis. The whole play was called back, and that's why, instead of sort of being a blowout route that, you know, like the Patriots were very in control of that game, and then the Rams came back to tie it. Late with Ricky Prohl. You know, as we know, Ricky Prohl is the only human being to actually have tied 2 Super Bowls in under 2 minutes, and no one knows who the hell he is, because Adam Vinatieri has beaten him both as a member of the Rams and as a member of the Carolina Panthers. So give it up for Ricky Prohl, who should introduce Adam Vinatieri at his Hall of Fame induction.
You know what? And this is, I'm look. Tabucky. It's Tabucky, not Dubucky, like I thought I heard you say. Tabucky Jones. His son, Tabucky Jones Jr., actually right now plays at Fordham University. Sure. But, you know, a classic Patriots guy. Came in 98, was gone by 2002, bounced around the league for a couple years, then tried to come back. Yeah, apparently he ended his career on the practice squad with the Patriots, probably carrying papers for Belichick. And it seems like at that point, well, I mean, I guess coaching, I was going to bring up coaching. You know, if you're going to come full circle at that point, you know, why not try and latch on, you know, a coaching job? But again, I guess it takes a certain person to be a coach. It's like part dick, part educator, part father.
Sure.
You know, and that's the good ones. So in some cases.
Like Mike Rabel. Mike Rabel, for example, was on that Super Bowl team, and he now coaches for the Houston Texans after having gone back to his alma mater, which I believe is Ohio State. You know what I'm saying?
These
are one of those.
Yeah, and even it was Bill O'Brien, even, you know, the head coach there, you know, with his, you know, got, you know, a disciple, a Belichick, correct? Wasn't he originally?
Yep. Oh, there's a lot of Patriots down in the Houston Texans. You got Romeo Crennel, a former defensive coordinator. You have Bill O'Brien, who was a offensive coordinator. Mike Rabel, a former player. Absolutely, lots of old faces. From Patriot Nation down in Houston, and we're glad that we beat them and stopped that that two-game losing streak was finally abated because people were losing their mind here. Well, I'm here in Massachusetts right now.
Now, okay, I wanted to. This is, you know, being the end of the year and 10 minutes in, guys. First of all, I want to thank One Lovely real quick. OneLovely.com. Go to O-N-E Lovely L-O-V-E-L-Y. .com, One Lovely. Probably way too late to order Christmas stuff, just being straight up with you there. Missed the bus on that, but go there. They got a bunch of great shirts, stuff like that, ship all over the country.
Oh, what a great way to use your Christmas money. For all you people that got money for Christmas, you got gift cards, you take some of that extra Christmas cash, but now you're feeling good flush in the new year, 2016, and you know what you do? OneLovely.com, everybody. Lovely things, one lovely thing for you there.
And if you're in La Jolla, California, go stop by our buddy Don Carlos Taco Shop on Pearl Street. Catty Corner from the La Jolla Comedy Store. Always amazing and delicious. I recommend the Trevino burritos. Amazing. The California burritos. Amazing. Now, don't eat these burritos and then get in your car and drive to L.A. I would not recommend that. If you're staying put, or get them to go. But either way, they are an incredible, incredible delight. And then moving forward, I wanted to do a recap kind of thing of the year. You know, it escapes. I know earlier we were trying to think of the NCAA. We were like, oh, yeah, who was even in the NCAA championship game? I guessed Duke beating Kentucky. What was your guess?
God, I really don't remember. Kentucky, I guess, was involved but didn't win?
Yeah, it was.
I don't remember.
It was Wisconsin. That's right. Wisconsin beat Kentucky in the quarterfinal, if I'm not mistaken. Does that sound right? Hold on. I got Google here. Let me. Sorry. Great. Sorry, listeners at home. You're stuck in traffic.
Well,
sorry.
Here you go. Well, I will give a recap of the year while you look that insignificant thing up. It went like this. Patriots win the Super Bowl. Royals win the World Series. Christmas. I think that's a pretty good wrap up of the year, right? Wouldn't you say, Sheez? It's like Patriots won in February.
That was, I mean, yeah.
Royals won in maybe was it November technically yet, or was it still? It was technically November.
I think it was like November 2nd or something like that.
Right.
You know, the classic.
So, because that's how baseball is now. So you won, and you no longer have. You lost. You know, you rented Cueto. Cueto has come and gone, which is. You know,
fine.
Okay,
I'm fine with
by
that.
Everyone in Royal Nation.
We got Dylan G. Yay. Go ahead. Yeah, no, I mean, that really is. So, yeah, it was Duke, Wisconsin in the final there. And then Wisconsin had upset Kentucky. And then Duke had blown out Michigan State by 20 points in the Final Four.
Yeah.
And right. So it's. You know, big MMA stuff, you know, like Ronda Rousey, all that. It's like, I just, that stuff, it's not my cup of tea. I got my cousin Zach here. He was showing me highlights. What was that dude? What's that guy's name? The Irish guy? the video that you were showing. He was showing me this video of this guy just talking shit at this. He's like the new, he's now forced to be the face of UFC because Ronda Rousey lost, and people aren't going to tolerate. If you're undefeated, you can be a star, but you can't have a loss and be a star. And, you know, it just, it took a lot of wind out of the sails. So now this is some new guys from like Ireland or something. But, talking of trash.
With, Connor, whatever his name is, Connor McGregor.
Yeah, Connor McGregor, right. And it sounds funny. Do you have that stuff? It's like, anyway, whenever he gets it, I'll pull it up or grab the audio from it. But, sorry, listener at home, we're doing this manually. See if you can link that up.
That's
to
all
this,
right. The link to this, continues Bluetooth. That Tom Brady sued the league after it was unjustly accused of Deflategate and being banned for 4 games, and he beat Roger Goodell and was not suspended for 4 games, and now he took a whooping on the league. Unfortunately, we stopped talking about Deflategate for 2 weeks, and we actually lost 2 14-point wins. Peyton Manning showed up dead on arrival one day, but it may be resurrected before Christmas. That's continuing our year in review.
Yeah, for me, it was just basic. It was a baseball coma. Starting actually in November of last year, you know, hung over from the World Series, all those festivities. And hold on. Wait, do you got Bluetooth on your thing? Here, this one's Philips. Here, I'll send it your way. Anyway, sorry, listener, again. I hope the traffic isn't that bad. Hope work isn't that boring today. But, yeah, so hung over from the Royals, and then that spilled over into the New Year's, and all of a sudden I'm looking at prospects, reading all that kind of stuff, and then right into spring training. Not following that day-to-day, but almost. And then just had baseball fever right out of the gate to recap.
You are seen in a San Diego hotel during the baseball winter meeting.
And yeah, that is
not
true.
Not coincidentally, it's your Kansas City Royals with the World Series. So you have to say that, Caesar, you helped make some moves there in San Diego. No one could prove you didn't. And you possibly helped bring a title, a 30-year title, back to Kansas City.
You know, I did. I had a lot of superstitions, you know, and everything that went into that that seemed to have played out in our favor. And it's not just me. It's everyone else in Kansas City that did the same thing I was doing with their own little things and kept it up because we needed every little ounce of that possible. But I started off my season, you know, doing comedy shows in Colorado. So I caught minor league Colorado Sky Sox, I believe. Colorado Springs Sky Sox. Minor league game, which was fantastic. Sure. Was in Denver the day before opening day, so missed that opportunity, which didn't really matter because when I flew back, this was my schedule. I fly in to get back home, and then I go straight to Anaheim to catch the Royals Angels. It was the game 2 or 3 of the series. There ends up being a brawl there. There's 10,000 Royals fans. It was just a great start to the season. And then from then on out, it was just kind of, you know, Padres games, you know, day games galore all year long. It was a very nice regular baseball season in the sense the Royals being in first place the majority of the year, watching the perennial powers like Detroit, the White Sox down at the bottom of the division. And I was actually, you know, surprised to see Minnesota hanging in there, you know, all the way up to the very, very end of the year. But other than that, I mean, good for Golden State. Happy you won. But that didn't really...
Well, it was a very exciting, and then it was a great start. It was a great story, as we had, is they not only won and beat LeBron and the Cavaliers, but then came storming out of the gate. And I'm here in Boston, and they came in to play the Celtics undefeated. And I have to be honest with you. As big of a Celtics fan as I am, as big of a homer as I is, I didn't want the Celtics kind of break the streak. I didn't want to be the guys, but I'll tell you this, I'm actually sort of happy that the Celtics took them to double overtime, and then the very next night, it was the Milwaukee Bucks, that in some ways, like, the buzz around Boston is sort of like, well, we know we could play with the Warriors, and we sort of set them up to fall, but we also don't take the bad karma of being like the Milwaukee Bucks, who actually broke the streak. Because I don't think anyone really wanted to see the you know, the Warriors is a really likable team. This isn't a, you know, obviously it's a team that has no, you know, does not have dominant big men. It's a very likable team.
Yeah, there's not really a bad guy on the team. They're very deep. I mean, I like it because Brandon Rush, one of the three infamous Rush brothers from Kansas City, played at KU. Older brother Kareem played at Missouri and Jaron at UCLA. Like, I didn't even know he was still in the NBA, and he scored 15, 20 points a week or two ago. They've got two starting lineups. Everyone's unselfish. They're a fun team to watch, but I never knew this. Like, I guess apparently no team has ever swept a 7-game road trip in NBA history.
Yeah, that was something I didn't know. And they got to the 7th game, which was back-to-back after a double OT. Klay Thompson had been injured and was sitting out for a couple of those games. And they just couldn't quite put it away.
Well, it's a lot to ask, for sure. But the streak stopped, I believe, at 25, something like that. Whatever it was, to get this far into the season, to have NBA talking heads talking about a potential Christmas Day still being undefeated, I mean, that's just incredible. When you have to go to some obscure baseball team, you know, from Baltimore in the 1870s that started out 19-0 or something, you know, when you're setting 130-year-old records, it's always
the Warriors have already won more games this season than a couple franchises, probably the Lakers and the Sixers, are going to win all season.
Combined, or like the Sixers combined.
Maybe,
maybe
combined. It's like the lottery teams won't win this many games at all, and the Warriors just put it down. And they went up and down the court and from town to town, and they kept it alive. And they didn't, you know, they were eye of the tiger and not showing any weakness. And they were playing every game to win. Which is, you know, almost like they were saying that, you know, I was watching some ESPN reporters and saying that there was almost like a high school level of excitement of how these guys were playing. They just, guys who like to play ball.
Well, they're always smiling. Well, okay, so I found, we're going to try to run this UFC audio real quick here. See,
let's do it.
Is this what Colin McGregor, you said?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
McGregor versus Jose Aldo.
Yeah.
Fight, trash talk.
Yeah. So anyway, this guy's making his money talking a lot of shit. Keep in mind, if you have kids listening, why are your kids listening? And secondly, a lot of F bombs and stuff like that. For sure, I'm guessing. Go ahead and.
I own this town. I own Rio de Janeiro.
It's
I'm here to say he is the king and I am the joker. If this was a different time, I would invade his favela on horseback and kill anyone that was not fit to walk. But we are in a new time, so I'll whoop his ass in July.
I don't know what's going on with that.
Little Brazilian. Move on my hair.
Either way, that's not, yeah, it's, sorry, the mic's, it's not really working that well. Let's go ahead and just cut that. Yeah, technical. Whatever the third mic. Anyway, the guy's just like, I'm awesome. And the guy's just a huge douche. And I'm sure if you're like a metal militia, dirt bike driving, energy drink, bathing, you know, kind of guy, you know, this guy, you love this guy. For me, this is just the worst guy ever. He's just, the UFC needs it so badly, too. It's like their bread and butter was an undefeated girl. You know what I mean? It's just like you're what, and I know it's a real sport and all this stuff, but I don't care how badass you are, you're a girl. And for me, it's just not as exciting. I don't want to watch girls beat the shit out of each other, okay? And so now that
I'd like to say that I think Ronda Rousey rose. And it's like, you think about that, last year's big sports story was domestic violence and how many male athletes get in trouble for hitting a woman in their life. And now, it's I think in some weird way, and I hope everyone takes this the right way, is clearly America likes to see women get hit as long as it's only by other women. They don't want to see men hitting women is wrong, but clearly there's still a taste for blood. And we want to see someone get hit. And if the women get hit by women, well, then we can support that.
Yeah, it's just, and I don't know. UFC is not going anywhere, but they're just so desperate for that lead guy that now this dude all of a sudden is – this amazing guy and all this stuff. And I think their problem is they're too alt. Like, if they would have just dimmed Ronda Rousey's limelight by about, you know, knock off like a third of that and just give it to anybody else to share, then we would, maybe more people would know who more than two UFC fighters are, you know. And but,
well, but that's one of those things where she was getting to name recognition. She was becoming household name across America status, where even like your mom and dad might know, you know what I'm saying, like people who aren't into sports. All of a sudden she's breaking up because people like Jimmy Kimmel and Fallon are talking about her. She's in late night monologues, and she becomes internet meme. So she was breaking out. It was becoming a superstar status, somewhat bigger than her actual athletic ability. As good as she is, it was still something. It's like Randall Cunningham for the Eagles. Some guys hit this stratosphere superstar level, you know, and even if it's only for a brief amount of time. And I think Ronda definitely hit.
Is she the Jeremy Lin of UFC, I guess? You know, just that hot.
Possibly. I can accept that, or, you know, just one of those things where there are people that become the thing. Hey, or how about the fact that it's like, you know, it's like the heavyweight champion was at boxing was just lost. The Karolinko brother lost, but no one cared because...
No one knew he was fighting. Hey, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back after this. I had to bring him on. Welcome, Zach, to Sportsaholic. Zach, how are you doing?
Doing great, John.
We're Justin level, so if they're blown out, they actually don't sound that bad.
No.
And you've met Eric briefly before, correct?
Yeah. I think he was kind of inebriated at the Comedy Store when I met him, so there might be...
A lot of people seem to meet me that way.
Yeah.
It happens. But no, since you were here and... You grew up in Columbia, Missouri. We shared a year of our lives living in a farmhouse that was your grandparents or great-grandparents?
Grandparents renovating it at the time, kind of turn-of-the-century farmhouse.
And let's just say, renovating is loosely used. It was more like we stayed there and I think cut the grass occasionally. We spent more time shooting shotguns in the side yard probably than actually remodeling or
throwing plates off the roof and shooting them with the shotgun.
Nothing to that degree,
but just to kind of sum it up for everybody.
It was something like that. It was kind of very like, don't tell mom the babysitter's dead kind of thing. But instead we had like a handheld clay pigeon thrower thingy. So instead of having the thing where you like pull and it shoots it, You would stand. Someone would stand there with the shotgun, Eric, and we would either or would be behind, and you would say pull. You would manually throw the clay pigeon up in the air, and we invented this game called baseball where you got 9 innings, a top and a bottom, and it was, you know, one on one. And if you got all 3 pigeons, it counted as like a bonus. So one run for each shot you got, but if you got all 3, you got a bonus run. So you could get 4 runs in each half inning. But I think it was like $15 would buy a case of shotgun shells or something. I mean, hours and hours worth of fun for $15.
Yep, just a good excuse to shoot a gun. So,
and the nearest neighbor was your uncle, so that worked out even better. But anyway, when that was probably about 10 years ago, I think maybe in Gary Pinkle, we're gonna talk college football, pseudo scandal. Just Gary Pinkle was in his second, maybe 3rd year with the team, and all these years later, still surprisingly with the team up until this last year. I know he retired under health concerns and things like that. Yeah. But you had this big walkout of players, obviously some racial tension on campus. And Missouri's an interesting, a weird state historically. A couple months ago, I was driving in to Columbia, and big Confederate flag guy driving down the highway, which a year ago you're like, okay, there's that guy. But now post, no more Confederate flag, it just seems even more racist, I guess it would be a good way to put it, now that it's kind of been banned and outlawed here and there. But because of all this injustice on Missouri's campus, half the football team walks out. Now, in your opinion, locally, what were local people? Were they just kind of, to me, it felt like if they weren't 4-9 or whatever, like having a horrible season, that the walkout probably doesn't happen. Is that kind of what the vibe there locally felt?
Yeah, it was. I mean, retrospectively, looking at it all now that it's all done, the whole protest was really just a single guy who was on a hunger strike who didn't really like how the president of the university was handling complaints that he had. So, I mean,
that's what it all boiled down to.
Yeah.
It was one guy hunger strike because the president handled these 2 instances with the feces and the swastika and the guy getting yelled at, getting called an N-word while rehearsing a play. That's crazy when you say it like that. And then they were friends with the team was members or something like that. Like they knew the guy.
Yeah. So the group who the guy was associated with, who was going on the hunger strike, basically they reached out to the football team, say like, hey, we really need to get some power behind this movement. So do you guys want to walk out on this game until the president steps down from the university? So, because in their minds, they believe that he didn't handle these complaints that the guy in the hunger strike
the proper way.
Yeah, the proper way.
So. Well, and so now that Pinkle has resigned, and it was,
and there's a lot of tension behind Pinkle at the time. Everybody, a lot of social media was backed. A lot of people were saying, "Hey, the coach, why would he let his players do this? Why would he walk out?"
He backs the players.
And on the other side, there's the, why does the football team have this much power over the university? Why is just them not playing one game going to make the president step down? Which, understandably, there's a lot of money that goes into the university through football. So, I don't know. It kind of made a lot of people scared because
coaches are usually the best, most paid person in the various states.
Yeah,
a state football coach is usually the highest paid employee, more than most governors.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 10 times most governors. Eric, do you have any questions for Zach? Zach grew up in the Midwest.
I love hearing this Mizzou thing. It's one of the stories it's actually one of the stories I've really been happiest about, because I love that. I kind of wish that Missouri had actually continued on with their strike, in a sense, because I wanted them to, you know, it's like I was really, I wanted that Northwestern team that wanted to unionize 2 years ago to unionize. Like, I really believe, I'm very against the NCAA and how they profit off the free labor of college students. And it is free labor. They're not getting, they're millions, there's a $6 billion ESPN contract out there, and, you know, these student athletes don't see a dime of it. And people fool themselves into thinking that, you know, books and tuition is a fair market value when it just simply isn't. It just is.
And they do get meal stipend. Yeah, it's like they do get a few grand, but it's not nearly enough. Especially, yeah, I mean, the main sports, if you're making a billion, well, just break them off.
Remember the Hungry Huskies from UConn? They had won the title and they were complaining. It's like, hey, some of these kids don't necessarily have money for food on the weekends because the commissaries that they have their meal plans at are closed. So yeah, they have to scrounge together, and you can't buy a kid dinner without violating his status.
Yeah, and they would, I remember that, they would have to go order off the dollar menu and just...
Right, which is always good for athletes to do.
And, I mean, and if you think about it, the more that this happens, the more that somebody struggles through their time with a university playing football, you know, they're going to look at this Mizzou case and say, hey, the Mizzou players, what, like 20 Mizzou players said they weren't going to play on Friday. The team and the coach kind of backed them up. They said, okay, we're going to stand behind our other teammates and support this guy. He's on a hunger strike. Or they kind of use the word, you know, he's going to die if we don't do this, even though he'd only been on a hunger strike for, I think, like maybe less than a week.
He still had at least 30 days left before he was.
Yeah. So, but it kind of showed the power that a football team has over its university. I think within 24 hours that they had said that they weren't going to play that Friday, the president had stepped down from the university. So it was kind of a wake up call to people. I think it's really going to show in the future of, hey, you know, this is the power that a football team can have. So,
I mean, you're talking about 70 guys and all the people redshirting and all the people. Yeah, it's especially in the SEC, and that is why Missouri went to the SEC, was for football. And let me ask you this: pre-SEC compared to post-SEC, when I lived in Columbia and we were roommates, that was Big 12 era. You had KU, you had Iowa State, K-State.
Nebraska,
Oklahoma.
Texas, Oklahoma's.
You know, all those good teams. And then I want to say it was 2009, 2010, 11, somewhere in there, they jumped to the SEC. Has not played KU since. But now when I come back to Columbia and I drive around, I see a lot of new shiny things. I see bridges that are covered that go over streets. I see renovations to stadiums and
whole
facilities.
It's a whole new university now.
So did that happen like is like from day one?
As soon as they signed the contract with the SEC, the year later, I mean, not even a year later, by the end of that year, there was 10 new construction projects on the University of Missouri. You know, they're renovating the stadium. They're building a new basketball arena. There's new dormitories going up, new halls going up all over the place, renovating the quad. And it's still happening, and it just keeps on building and building and building on itself because of all the money that's now pouring into the university.
So it's not just going to athletics. Like you said, the new dorms. I guess you need new dorms to house athletes, I guess. So I guess it may still be all athletics, but I'm sure they divide it up, you know, evenly amongst the entire university when that's your major.
Do not be sure. They do not divide it up evenly. Do not be sure of that. They do not do that. You should look into that.
Well,
athletic programs are very, very powerful.
So, okay. So even if they do, all I'm saying is there is it's very clearly a better campus visually, and it seems much more updated.
That Big 12 was falling apart. That Big 12 kind of got down to a Big 8, right?
I mean,
it was 10.
The Big 8 that became a Big 12. Remember, back when I first went to college, they were the Big 8.
Yeah, me too. Big 8. I grew up. Big 8 was Oklahoma State, Oklahoma, Iowa State, Missouri. Nebraska, Colorado.
They expanded out to Big 12, but then the Big 10 started to eat away, and they had 14 teams. And suddenly, you know, all of a sudden, there was a point where the Big 10 had 12 teams, and the Big 12 had 10 teams.
And a lot of people will blame
us. The power was on.
A lot of people blame Missouri. I mean, TCU and West Virginia are not original members of the Big 12, believe it or not. You know, yet you had Missouri, you had Texas A&M, and Nebraska. But what happened is, and Colorado, who went to the Pac-12, but Nebraska, word got out that Nebraska was talking to the Big 10 about going, and then before they could even make a decision, Missouri was gone to the SEC. And then Nebraska was like, well, if they're going, we're going to go to the Big Ten. And then next thing you know, Colorado's like, we don't even really like playing you guys anyway. We're more of a Western, you know, West Coast kind of school. It's going to help our recruiting if we can recruit out west. So they were gone.
Yeah, if they can recruit to California, it's a whole lot better for them than trying to recruit in
They're in no man's land, you know, recruiting wise, in the middle of the Rocky Mountains. And then all of a sudden the Big 12 standing there and like, are you kidding? Like, okay, TCU, I guess, West Virginia, question mark. I mean, it's on the other side of Tennessee, isn't it? I mean, I guess it will have to do. I mean, it's better than taking.
They were a cast off from the exploding Big East. That was running. Everyone from the Big East was running for cover because Big East football never really came together because Miami and Boston College had run away. They never got Penn State locked up in the beginning, and they let Penn State go to the Big Ten when they should have. They should have locked up Penn State in the Big East.
It's
you know, and then all.
I don't know. Like, I wish the conferences at this point just get even bigger and like. Maybe adopt some sort of like soccer Premier League system. And what I mean is you have your mid-level conferences, you know, and all those teams that are like, you know, oh. So what it would be is if you're in the Sun Belt and you win the Sun Belt Conference, well, guess what? Next year you're going to be preseason ranked number 12 in the Big 12. And whoever was number 12 in the Big 12 goes down to the Sun Belt Conference. But it's not – but it's divided up in like – you know, five or six, you know, or maybe even four major conferences, or maybe just two major conferences of like 10 teams or what, either way, I getting way too detailed in it now. It's just ultimately to get back to Missouri and Zach, who's here right now, there's a lot of money at stake and Missouri.
Oh yeah. And you, I mean, you could see the change in Missouri once they went out of the SEC. You know, it was kind of like they left their hardworking family and just went for the white collar job. And now they're kind of living on the high horse. They've got a lot more money going around. And I mean, I don't blame them seeing the university, what it's gone from the Big 12 to the SEC and all the extra money that's poured in there. I mean,
well, yeah, because it's not just football. You've got, you know, your volleyballs, you know, you got your baseball. Like, everyone's traveling now. Coaches get to go down to Florida and talk about the home games for, you know, the SEC fans that travel. Like, say Tennessee comes in.
It's great. Yeah. I mean, So, yeah, I mean, we're playing South Carolina. The town now has 10,000 people from South Carolina because everybody in the SEC football is kind of life to them. And they just travel around with their team all year, and they pour a lot of money into the city. I mean, nobody would travel like that in the Big 12. So, and
football,
especially in the first.
When they talk about a college that travels well, these are SEC teams all travel well, even the ones that, you know, the Gamecocks aren't necessarily good from year to year.
Yeah, but I mean, you can definitely see the, you know, all the money that just pours in. Just because of the football, and people are really dedicated to their football teams in the SEC, and it's fun to see. You know, there's the people running around. You know, they're all really nice. They've all got their Southern charm and
their iced tea and lemonade.
Yeah, they've got their candied bacon at the tailgates, and you know,
Zach just had his first Thanksgiving in Alabama and had.
Oh, wow.
Had candied bacon. I'd never heard of such a thing.
Oh no! I recently had candied bacon at a barbecue. It is amazing. And I'll tell you something else to do with that candied bacon. You put it on a slice of watermelon, you'll thank me. Just have a piece of candy bacon on some watermelon and enjoy heaven, my friend. That's what I'm going to say.
Hey, but you know what? But you know, as we wind down, and listeners, guys, want to thank you again for listening and supporting the show and spreading the word. We've had, I think it was somewhere almost 18,000 episode listens in the past 4 months. So that is because of you and spread and armed service people overseas. I look at the statistics. It says, it's like, I know that people in Egypt and Germany, it's like, I know what you're doing. You're out there fighting, you know, flying drones, backing up borders, patting people down, putting your life out there every day. So thank you for that. But before we wanted, I almost forgot, a lot of people were going to say the American Pharoah, the Triple Crown winner. That, I mean, that's got to, that hadn't happened in like 30 years, right? That's got to be,
yeah,
one.
Yeah, I forgot all about it. That's how important that was. Important.
Yeah. Well, that's, I'm just saying.
I'm going to compare American Pharoah.
It's up here.
To Muammar Gaddafi. Because people actually forget that Muammar Gaddafi is dead. It's like Muammar Gaddafi was a big deal until he wasn't, and now people sort of forget, like, oh yeah, he's not even around anymore. Like, American Pharoah is like,
that's the guy that got murdered in Tripoli, right? By his own, like, they overthrew him and then they sodomized him with like rebarb.
It wasn't a good time. It wasn't a good time, but a better time for American Pharoah, who's gonna put out the stars.
You know what? You know what? Screw you. I just found this list where he's okay. Well, it's not even a, it's, well, America Online, whatever, they have that as the best sports story of the year. I don't know about that, but that's the first Triple Crown since 1978.
It's not the best sports story of the year.
You probably, they, for some reason, they have the Patriots as number three winning the Super Bowl, and then I find the Royals at number 11. That doesn't make any sense. They've got the Warriors. They got the Warriors at seven, list. And Ronda Rousey at six. This is, and then they mixed in a few other.
Is the Warriors two?
They have the Warriors at seven. It's the seventh best sports story. Anyway, it's America Online. No one's thought of them since they stopped sending out those CDs in the mail every other week. Those things were awesome. Well, Eric, it's been a fantastic year. Another one in the books. You know, when we get back together face-to-face, we're going to sit down and do another one.
Yep, 2016, my friend. 2016. I look forward to a new year of Sportsaholics. If I can just give a little bit of shout out, guys, in the new year, here's something to look out for. July 22nd. It's called Ghostbusters. It's a little independent movie. It's called Ghostbusters. It stars as one of the Ghostbusters, a good friend of our show, a friend who's been on the show a couple times, Leslie Jones. And Leslie Jones, you can check her out in InStyle magazine to see pictures of her of the Ghostbuster costumes, because all the press is starting to hit. It's going to start hitting right now. And also check out New Yorker magazine for a big profile of our own Leslie Jones, talking about Saturday Night Live, talking about Ghostbusters, how she's blowing up in her career. You might even see the mention of a certain Eric Marino, Sportsaholic, somewhere in the pages of New Yorker magazine. So if you guys check it out online, find it. If there's anywhere that still sells in the magazine shop, pick it up. New Yorker magazine with the profile of our good friend Leslie Jones. That's one to grow on for.
Hell yeah.
Merry Christmas, everybody. I'd also like to say, before I go, to wrap up this year in review, I would like to wish a very happy marriage to my co-host, a man I couldn't do this show without because he is the brains and the brawn of this whole operation. Mr. John Cheeser, congratulations. You'll be getting married. By the time many people hear this, by the time we do the next one, you will be a married man. You are marrying your offensive and defensive coordinator, your business manager. It's a great story. You guys are two of my favorite people. I wish you guys the very best, and I look forward to spending a lot more time with you guys as a married couple. Mazel tov, John. I'm looking forward to seeing Mrs. Cheese in the new year. Have a great wedding day. Sorry I can't be there with
hey,
you.
Hey, it's all love right. We'll share. I appreciate all the kind gestures. I mean, this is being recorded, so I can actually just cut this out and just play that at the ceremony. Be like, Eric Marino wanted to said this. I just thought you guys should hear this too. And then just press play, and it'll repeat that.
Yeah,
but no,
I pre-record my toast.
We'll put up a picture of you, Eric.
Yeah, good. That's right, black and white up on the monitor. But in all sincerity, thank you, man. That means a lot. And No, it's great. I've got an amazing offensive coordinator. Makes great calls in the game of life, and it's just, I think we just re-upped the contract. It's a lifetime contract, and there's some amazing clauses in there, and some signing bonuses. So everything made sense, and you know, I think the team Sheezer is stronger than ever and looking very bright in the future.
I love that she supports you and your Royals, but keeps her Charger rivalry against your Chiefs. I think that things. I think that keeps a nice kind of tension between the two of you. That
yeah.
you are together, but you are also individual.
And Zach will test this. There is Charger stuff hanging up right now. Is there not?
There are a couple things. Definitely outnumbered by the Royals gear.
I mean,
that you have a plethora of. But
I mean, what is a plethora?
At least 60 items that say Royals on it in the department here.
I would far 60. There's one. I would say if you're 20 at the most. 20 at the. I mean, are you counting the fridge?
I mean, I see 10 hats right now with Royals on it. So.
So okay, if you count the fridge, 30. If you count the magnets, I mean, there's
there's just a lot of Kansas City stuff, but.
I'm also really looking forward towards the episode many years in the future where you tell me that your now wife, who you're about to marry, is forcing you to sell your baseball collection because you just started your baseball collection, and I'm really looking forward to the day when your wife tells you you got to sell it.
No, here's what I did. Eric, here's what I did is intentionally, unprovoked, I said, honey, you know that these aren't worth anything, right? And she was like, what do you mean? I go, these aren't really worth that much. This one, you know, and I just went through, like, this one might be worth $50 and this one's this. Like, this one, nobody, I just like this player. No one really likes that guy, you know. And so I just kind of let her know the overall value of what you're looking at isn't really that much. Right. It's a lot of it's sentimental value. And then the other part of that is you got to have someone to buy it before it's actually worth anything. That's what my dad used to always say about baseball cards. He'd be like, this is worth $17. And he's like, well, as soon as someone gives you $17, you let me know. You're like, all right. And that was, you know, never, unless you went to the baseball card store and they'd give you $6.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good dad talk. It's a good dad talk. That's telling you as soon as you buy a car and you drive it off the lot, it just appreciated half its value. Absolutely. Good dad talk.
Don't bend those corners on those Michael Jordan third-year cards is what I'm telling you also. Bad investment strategy if you're going with basketball cards. But, guys, it's been an incredible year. It's going to get even crazier for me here in the last few weeks. But, Eric, I cannot wait to get back face-to-face in L.A. Zach, thanks for coming in all the way from the beautiful state of Missouri.
Thank you, Zach. Great segment today, Zach.
Any closing words?
So as far as Missouri goes, closing thoughts on Missouri. Barry Odom's the new head coach.
Who is that?
He's an old linebacker from Mizzou. Used to play back in the late 90s under Larry Smith, I believe, when they broke into the top 25 for the first time in a long, long time
when
since
they had
the 70s.
That old white running back, what was his name, that played in the NFL briefly?
Brock Olivo.
Brock Olivo. Yeah, and he played for the 49ers and the Lions, I think.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And so, I really admire him. He started out his coaching career coaching a high school team in Columbia that was, you know, went 0-14, I think, and before he started. And within 2 years, I believe they won the state championship.
What high school was that?
Rockbridge.
Really?
So, yeah. Yeah.
No
and
kidding.
Turned that program around. I think he coached at Memphis for a little while before he went back to Mizzou, had them ranked pretty high
nationally. So how long has he been in Missouri before he? Just a few years now?
Just a few years now, but they've been ranked very, very good defensively, and I think he's got a good attitude. And I don't know, mark my words, the Missouri's probably going to be going up in the SEC. So
that's great. You know what? The defense is already the best, obviously, due to – what's Coach Neal? What's his name? Or what's the coach? What's the hire?
Brock Olivo.
What's the new head coach of Missouri? What's his name?
That's Barry Odom.
Barry Odom. Okay, so Barry Odom's been.
I want Missouri to be very good, and I want the Iowa Hawkeyes to be very good, and I want the two teams to meet in a bowl game so their quarterbacks can be completely. completely confused by who the fuck they're throwing to. They have the identical helmet.
Hell yeah.
It's actually identical.
Toss in Mississippi State, just in case, you know, in Wichita State. Wait, never mind. That's their plane. Anyway, Eric. Hey, we'll talk to you in the new year. Guys, thanks for listening. Zach, thanks for being by. Guys, thanks for staying obsessed. Find us on Twitter at Sportsaholics with an X, sportsaholics at gmail.com. Guys, stay obsessed.
Stay obsessed.
I got me some braids and I got me some hoes. Started rocking the sleeve, I can't buy with no jaws. You know how I do, I can close on my toes. Ooh. I ain't rich yet, but you know I ain't broke. So if I see it, I like it, buy that from the store. I'm with some white girls and they love them to coke. Like they OT, double OT, like I'm KD, smoking OG. And you know me, and my 2-3s and my gold tee. Bitch, you're smiling, bitch, you see me from the nosebleed. I'm the new 3 and I change out to my new D. White Iver song. When I started balling, I was young. You gon' think about me when I'm gone. I need that money like the ring I never won. I won. Saucin', saucin', I'm saucin' on you. I'm swaggin', I'm swaggin', I'm swaggin' on you. I'm ballin', I'm ballin', I've a song. Watch out, oh watch out, yeah. I smash out, I smash out, I smash out, yeah. I'm spending on my fucking pay. Ooh, stunning. Cigarettes in a heaven. Comas in my head, man. Slumped over like a dead man. Red and black by my bread, man. I'm the answer, never question. Lace up, learn a lesson. Bitch, I'm saucin', I do this often. Don't do no talking. My options right when I walk in. Jump on them Jordans, I'm ballin'. Money jumpin' like I'm Davis from New Orleans. Oh, bitch, I'm hardin', I don't miss nothing. Fuck practice, this shit just happens. No, y'all can't stand it, I have it. I never pass it, I wear my magic. High average, ball on these bastards. It makes me happy, it's tragic. I make it happen, and all y'all shacked. White Iver song. When I started ballin', I was young. You gon' think about me when I'm gone. I need that money like the ring I never won. I won. Saucin', saucin', I'm saucin' on you. I'm swaggin', I'm swaggin', I'm swaggin' on you. I'm ballin', I'm ballin', I've a song. Watch out, oh, watch out, yeah. I smash out, I smash out, I smash out.